Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my, I think it is, Dave Allen. It seems like it's been so long since we were able to say hello to you. But you're back, and we welcome you back, and glad everything you were safe and enjoyed your time off. But today...
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back after a week of R&R with my family.
Yes, that's awesome. And today is Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. And yeah, so got some good news in the markets, Dave.
Yeah.
You want to know what that is?
Other than this late afternoon surge in gold, what else is going on?
How about that? We're hitting 2,000 once again, up $10.20. Yeah. So did you want to add anything prior to that?
No,
you don't. Did you forget already what we're celebrating today?
What are we celebrating today? I didn't even look.
No.
So I'm sorry to disappoint everybody.
See?
We'll get back into it after a couple of programs.
See, how about that? Gone a week and boy, oh boy, already you've forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to forget those. So we'll make one up for today.
There we go.
So let's make it good to have a dog day. Happy
go.
To have a dog day. Dog days of summer are coming, so we're happy for dogs, for our little animals.
My dog was very happy to see me on Sunday, late Sunday afternoon.
Oh, did he miss you?
She was walking out to the lobby with her caregiver. Just very happy-go-lucky, looking straight ahead. She got maybe within 10 feet. I guess she got a sniff of me, and then that tail went wagging. We had a love fest reunion. It was a beautiful thing.
A lot different the way Ruby reacts to me. She's there. Oh, you back? Okay.
Yeah. So soon?
So soon.
That's when I was starting to have fun.
I love you, Mom, but gee.
Oh, my.
But gold today had a nice day, up 10 bucks, hitting the 2,000 level right now in the New York spot price after market. Let's see what the COMEX for June was 2008, almost 2009. So up up and away. Silver had a little pullback, $25.06. It was down 18 cents. Platinum was up 5 at 1,100. Palladium took another beating today, 3.5%, 1,565, down $52. The USDX today was up 0.53 at 101.86. Crude oil was down another $1.65 at 77.10. Interesting to see the upward move in dollar and gold showing strength at the same time. So we'll have to see if it reverses itself a little bit tomorrow. But again, it's going to go up. It is going to go down. But ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't figured out yet that the long-term trend for both gold and silver is higher, you gotta be on another planet if you haven't figured that one out. And but I think most of you know. And so the paper markets today, pressure on the Dow, 344 points to the downside, 33,530. S&P was down 65 points, 4,071. The NASDAQ was down 2%. 238 points at 11,799. Asian markets, Nikkei was positive, rest were negative. Germany was positive, just by 8 points. Everything else was negative. 10-year yield is down 3.39%. That's the 10-year yield. Let's take a peek at natural gas. That was down 0.75%. 2.256. So, and again, it's just another day. Everybody is just waiting and talking about a couple of things, but mostly a lot about the Fed. But I'm not even sure, Dave, if the talk of the debt ceiling and default has not overpaced the discussion on whether the Fed's going to raise rates or hold them next month. So, but we are seeing a consumer confidence that dipped again this month, and slowing economy, possible recession. Conference Board reported today that its consumer confidence index fell about 3 points to 101.3 in April, from 104 in March. Now, this is the third time in 4 months that this overall consumer confidence declined. Any optimism about current economic conditions? That ticked up a little bit, although consumers are less positive about the short-term future. Let's see. Business Research Group's Present Situation Index, that measures consumers' assessment of current business and labor market conditions. That actually inched up to 151 from 148 last month. So, and, you know, the board's expectations index, and that's a measure of consumers' six-month outlook. And that includes income, business, labor conditions. That fell to 68.1 this month from 74 in March. And anything under 80 often signals a recession here coming in the next year. Let's see. And with that in mind, the Conference Board noted that reading in particular has come in below 80 every month but one since February of last year. So, hey, folks, if you haven't figured out we're already in a recession, or if you don't like this definition of a recession and you're waiting for a new one, well, that's coming too. So we're either in one or a recession is coming soon. So, Dave?
Yeah, well, we know that, despite inflation having eased somewhat in March, still remains well above the Fed's 2% target. Level, and 83% of Fed fund futures traders today expect the Fed to raise by 25 basis points when it meets next week, actually. Meanwhile, consumer expectations about inflation remain elevated. Consumers may begin to start to economize even more amid all this growing pessimism. Although respondents to the survey remained optimistic about the job market, which is, as we know, has held up fairly well, even as the Fed has raised rates. And with an average long-term mortgage rate now, it's about 6.4%. Many potential home buyers still being pushed to the sidelines because of those hundreds of dollars a month or more in extra costs. Melody.
Okay. Let's see. You know, the money supply. And I think there's various reports on this, too. But the Federal Reserve, they did update markets on the amount of U.S. money supply today. It's supposed to offer an important clue to inflation, the path of inflation anyway, and maybe shed some light on what the Fed's going to do. Money supply measured by M2 is the total of currency coins, savings deposits held by banks, balances in retail money market funds, and more. This broader classification of money in the financial system entered the spotlight earlier this year after contracting on the annual basis for three straight months. This is an unprecedented streak since the data was first introduced way back in 1959. So you had December was M2's first year-over-year contraction ever, followed by January's 1.75% fall and February's 2.4% decline. To 21 trillion. And this is the steepest decline in money supply yet. So just how much this M2 will fall is a matter of debate. You know, strategist Michael Wilson at the Too Big to Fail Morgan Stanley believes that the M2 is likely to fall sharply with the recent stress in the banking sector. So other folks, other economists also see a continued contraction for many more months going forward, Dave.
Yeah, I'm just, bear with me. I'm just looking to see if what that report is. I don't see it just yet, so I don't know if the Fed hasn't posted it yet. Oh, but bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. No, I don't... I don't see the number, but I mean, there's clear consensus that another decline in M2 would give us more evidence that inflation should continue to cool and likely influence the Fed. But to what extent, I don't know. Based on the CME group's probabilities, 80 some percent. I think it's going to go up 25 basis points. I don't know that the Fed will put on the brakes in May, but in fact, we could see, based on this movement, a change in their post-meeting press conference statement that would give an indication that they're ready to pause now, based on. What's going on. So, again, when there's less money floating around, less there is for banks to lend and for everyone to borrow, whether you're a consumer or a business. If you can't borrow it, in some cases, you can't spend it and grow the economy. That in turn helps push down prices. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there's, again, more and more folks who follow this all the time, like Vincenzo Inguccio at Nomura Holdings says, this lower money supply should take care of inflation. But I wouldn't be too confident in what all the experts are saying, because we know that inflation is proving everybody is humbling a lot of the so-called experts over the past couple of years, actually longer than that, but particularly over the last couple of years. So we will see.
Well, we will see. And, you know, and again, I mean, removing this money supply really doesn't remove inflation or lowering. It might take pressure off the top, but the problem is we still have the same system, and the same system creates inflation. So it gives the illusion. It gives the illusion that inflation is dropping. And again, what I've said for time and time again. So you have your food prices. So you know, a pound of hamburger was $2, and it went to $8. So it drops down to $5, and everybody's really happy. So that's a big drop in inflation. And
we go. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just found.
That's okay.
The latest release, which interestingly shows that, well, M2 has decreased again, not by much, 111, well, by over 100 bill, 100 and. $120 billion. That's not chump change, and that's about what we're seeing a month. So, well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if some of the FOMC members, particularly the newer appointees, take this number and say, "Hey, you know, let's pause now, and we'll revisit." Again, the following month, so as opposed to raising and waiting.
Do they only use the M2? Because I know there's other ones that they use that would probably show it increasing, perhaps.
There's several measures. M1 used to be used, but M2's been because it's more encompassing. That's been used. Or refer to, generally speaking, whenever someone talking an official, government official, or a media pundit talking about money supply, we're talking about M2.
But as far as the reality of what is really the creation of funds and so forth.
Well, M2, I think, is a more accurate depiction.
Okay.
Myself, I mean,
with losing and going down in funds, First Republic Bank said that it lost a total net of $72 billion in deposits during the first quarter. Now, that's an outflow. It would have topped $100 billion if it had not been for a bailout from 11 of the nation's largest banks. Customers pulled their money from the San Francisco's bank following the March 10th failure of the SVB. That was an event that triggered panic across the banking system. It caused a lot of depositors to seek that perceived safety of some bigger financial institutions. First Republic tried to weather the storm by borrowing from the Fed, receiving $30 billion in uninsured deposits from 11 of the country's largest banks and hiring advisors to pursue a number of options, actually including a sale. And despite all of those moves, First Republic's total deposit balance still fell by a total of, 41% during the quarter to $104 billion. So without the $30 billion infusion, its net outflow would have been $102 billion. And certainly it was considerably more than what anyone had expected. The disclosure sent First Republic stocks spiraling in after-hours trading yesterday down as much as 21%, and again this morning. Its stock has dropped more than 85% since January. Didn't I see it was down? I saw something was down $100 today. I don't know if that was...
Yeah, it was down big early when the market opened.
When it opened, yeah.
As investors got to react to this latest news. You got folks like Jason Benowitz at C.I. Roosevelt saying, well, the future of this company is very uncertain. That's a quote. He said their borrowing will really weigh on their profitability, both in the reported quarter and moving forward. This is not something to be taken for granted, because they're in trouble, ladies and gentlemen. And we're out of time.
We are, Dave. And I think we'll return in just a few minutes. And I hope the listeners stay with us. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you
up. And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And, you know, the big talk is the debt default. I believe they'll, you know, the more focus they put on the debt defaulting, the more it's unlikely to happen. And it's interesting because no one really talks about the government. The government would shut down first in some segments and so forth before they would actually default. So they're kind of skipping over those that report on it and so forth and think it's a, you know, to get to the, you know, think that they're, the Republicans or Congress is playing games and so forth. And they only shut down certain parts of the government that really aren't needed anyway. You think they keep them closed, but doesn't.
In the meantime, it's a headline grabber.
It absolutely,
you know,
is.
It plays on people's uncertainty, their lack of knowledge about it or interest even, to try and make it a big issue. And, you know, a default would be a big issue. I mean, no one's disputing that. But like you say, the chances of that happening are next to nil.
It's going to take some sort of an event for that to happen. Now, don't get me wrong. I think raising the debt ceiling is and the problems that we have with debt too great to ever be paid, it really does need to be defaulted on. That's the only way we can ever get back to
kind of the reset.
Something needs to happen. It's ridiculous. They just keep raising it and raising it and raising it. No one ever cuts things back. No one ever adjusts. And I said the other day, if I heard what was true, the only thing that was only a third of what they can vote on and change. Everything else is mandatory payments. So, they need better accounting. I mean, when billions and billions go missing from the Defense Department, are you kidding me? And certainly, how much more can the taxpayers pay? Yeah, just keep on raising those. Yeah, we'll get more blood from the citizens of this country without addressing the problems and then just letting everything else go to waste. And it truly is incredible. So they do need to default. But are they going to do it this time? Nobody knows whether they will or whether they won't. And if we look at to what's the most important item on their agenda, it's just their re-elections on both sides. That's what they're going to look out for. So it isn't you and me that they're looking out for. It's they themselves. You know, Moody's Analytics, it's the economic research arm of the ratings agency. They had got a couple of economists, and they said that raising the debt ceiling will surely be messy and painful to watch, generating significant volatility in financial markets. Lawmakers will not be sufficiently motivated to find a political path forward. Well, there really isn't one, but and act until they recognize the severe economic and political cost of not doing so. You had they also assessed House GOP leader McCarthy's proposal to lift the debt ceiling alongside spending cuts. And they estimate that his package would result in lower employment and slower economic growth than if the debt ceiling was raised without those spending cuts. But Dave, trying to hit inflation, it's going to result in lower employment and slower economic growth anyway. So,
yeah.
What's the difference?
This current chaos, is a sign of just how seriously investors are taking the extreme level of uncertainty and volatility in Washington. 3-month T-bills are yielding 1.77 percentage points more than their 1-month equivalent. That's the largest gap of all time. As of yesterday's close, the 3-month Treasury bills were yielding 5.06%, while the 1-month bills were 3.29%. Both of them, by the way, higher than certainly the 3-month bills higher than the 10-year yields. We know that when markets are nervous, investors pile into Treasury securities, commodities like gold and silver.
Help me understand this question.
What?
If we see these yields change to such a degree,
mm-hmm.
because people are concerned that there could be a default, why would anybody want to go to Treasuries?
Well, if they really felt that was a distinct possibility, they either wouldn't, or rates would be even higher. I think we see that's what's happening with the 3-month being 5.06. I think investors are seeing, well, what's happening in 3 months? Well, that's when the government kind of runs out of money altogether. The Treasury's extraordinary measures are gone, and that's when a default would come.
So they're gambling.
I mean, and if they really thought that there wasn't going to be a deal, those 3 months yields would probably be another, maybe even double the 5.06, but they'd be at least a couple, 1 or 2 percentage points higher, if not more.
Yeah, but that's my point. No matter how high they would be, if the government defaulted, they wouldn't be worth anything anyway. It didn't matter if they were paying 20%.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's not in the field of reality for 99% of Treasury investors.
Because these Treasury investors have always been conditioned to believe that the government would always pay them, that it's a guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not. And it's not.
And it's not a guarantee. There's nothing to guarantee it. So.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a very interesting thing going on. And, you know, the closer we get to June, the summer months, when the Treasury Department says the extraordinary measures end and we hit the X date, I mean, we're going to see some more guidance from the Yellen folks the coming days based on the latest tax revenue data coming in, which apparently is lower, if not a lot lower, than had been anticipated earlier in the year. Anyway, be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you invest in. Don't forget us, ladies and gentlemen. If you're looking for safety and value, 1-800-375-4188.
And yeah, we talk a lot about this, about how we see these so many countries trying to move away from the U.S. dollar. And that is just growing and growing for more and more countries. We talk about Brazil to the Southeast Asian nations. They're all calling for trade to be carried out in other currencies beside the U.S. dollar. So dollar has always been king in global trade for decades. We know this. Everything is priced in the dollar. Commodities needed by all. So, but since the Fed has embarked on a journey of aggressive rate hikes to fight domestic inflation, but I think we've seen this even sooner. I think we've been seeing a pulling away from the dollar ever since the Great Recession of 2008. It was back then that China has said they didn't feel and they didn't really want a reserve currency. They wanted multiple, and they've been working on that ever since. It's just now becoming noticeable to the point. Yeah, so we've seen over those years that we've seen Russia sell their treasuries. We've seen, you know, China dumping their dollars and their investments. And we've seen other countries do it. And now it's at a point where people are beginning to pay attention. But we've been talking about this for decades, for a long time. And it was just a matter of time. And what really hurt Dave, I believe, is when we had the dollar up there, when they pushed the dollar up to 114, it was killing these emerging markets. This is their way of fighting back. And so by diversifying their holding reserves into some more multi-currency portfolios, maybe they can reduce the pressure on some of their external sectors. And as I always say, we still see the dollar as, you know, still a main reserve, although it is lower.
Yeah, it used to be 70%, I believe. Now it's, what, 58?
That's quite a drop. That's quite a drop. I mean, it's a major drop.
So we're talking about, like, say, the yuan becoming... Mm-hmm. The major reserve, that accounts for 2.7% of global reserves. Now, that might be, the importance of that might be overstated if China is looking at bilateral agreements with, you know, whether it's India, whether it's Brazil, you know, then it's it takes on, I think, more importance. I mean, we do know that China's has more trading partners now than we do, in terms of our being the largest trading partner to 30 countries, China more than twice that amount. Now they're holding less than $1 trillion of treasuries. That's the lowest in well over a decade. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there. I mean, this particular article doesn't really mention Saudi Arabia, who wants to change the way that oil is traded. But again, I think it's going to be years in the making, and it's got to be, I think, a strong and coordinated effort among a lot of countries, particularly China, and perhaps India, even though they're not as sophisticated a player, although with their population it's about to overtake China's if it hasn't already. You know, there's certainly brain power coming out of that country as well. So we'll see where things are. Melody, maybe you and I will have the pleasure of talking about the same issue 10 years from now.
Oh, maybe. But you know what, when we talk about India, I mean, that's where, you know, the next manufacturing boom is going to be. They certainly have the number of people, and certainly they can probably pay them less than your Asian countries now, since they've become so modernized. I mean, look at Vietnam, and you know, look. I mean, people you wouldn't even reckon. People that have gone there say they wouldn't. You wouldn't even recognize various places in the Asian countries because they have, you know, manufacturing has moved in. So, so that's the next place that you'll see slave labor. And Africa, of course, we know, you know, for all those minerals needed for the electric vehicle batteries, all of that comes, a lot of it comes from that area, used child slave labor.
And how about this, the two warring factions in Sudan?
Yeah. Sudan. Yeah.
I mean, there apparently, you know, there's growing tension over gold, in particular gold reserves, that they're vying for a large chunk of, pun intended.
Yeah. We did talk a little bit about last week about the mortgage fees changing May 1st. That's coming up. So if you're looking to buy a home, get in there. Folks, especially if you have a good credit score, you know, it looks like, you know,
first.
Keeping your credit score high, they told us all these years, we just get penalized. So welcome. Welcome to America. Surging inflation, your retirement savings, according to new data, your surging prices for everyday expenses certainly has squeezed your budgets. To the point of kneecapping an alarming number of household retirement savings in 2022. The TIAA Institute and George Washington's University Global Financial Literacy Excellence Centers. Man.
GWUGFLEC. Yeah. They're PFI.
Oh, I'll tell you. Anyway, there is this report that was released last week found that a quarter of Americans slashed their retirement savings by a full 12%.
Wow.
And to quit saving entirely over the last year, the steep of a drop on top of a crisis where 40% of Americans already don't have enough saved for retirement means many families will have to work even harder. Some say the reduction in savings could have lasting effects that will make it more difficult. Of course, we know that. When somebody reduces how much they save for retirement, it may not be just a one-time cut. And you know what? Especially if you're in retirement and your retirement savings get cut, usually you can't recover that. It's a loss. It depends on your age, where you're at, and so forth. Rarely do you ever make it back. Maybe you might break even, but you're not going to get any more, and it will never cover what you lost, Dave, in purchasing power.
Yeah. Well, some of the numbers coming out of this report are similar to what we've heard about in the recent past. 30% say they're finding it difficult to make ends meet. That's up, well, up 25% from 24% in 2021, the heart of the pandemic. 26% say they're debt constrained. 39% lack sufficient savings to cover 1 month of living expenses.
And here we go again. Going into the third segment, our break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. Again, you know where to reach her. 1-800-375-4188. We mentioned this institution a couple times earlier, Silicon Valley Bank. It was systemically important, right? When SVB failed, Signature Bank, which was a New York regional bank known mainly for lending to Broadway and which became unstuck in crypto, turned out to be systemically important too. So if they were important, I guess you could ask who isn't? Well, the Financial Stability Oversight Council, it's the top government body that oversees the strength and resilience of the nation's financial system, last week released, or supposed to oversee it anyway, last week released what they're calling a proposed analytic framework for financial stability risks. In other words, it wants to more easily be able to designate certain non-banks as being systemically important. not sure where all that goes, but in the complex modern financial system, they say it's easy to imagine a case where a non-bank turns out to be systemically important. I don't know if they're talking about, you know, the online financial institutions. I mean, they point to insurance company AIG, which had to be bailed out in 2008 for that reason. As an example, hedge fund LTCM caused its own potential systemic crisis 20 years before that, when the New York Fed needed to mobilize a rescue operation. Treasury Secretary Yellen says the current designation process could take 6 years to complete. And that, she adds, is an unrealistic timeline that could prevent the council from acting to address an emerging risk to financial stability before it's too late. Now, the fact sheet laying out the new framework is pretty broad in its interpretation of who or what could be systemically important. It includes central counterparties, for instance, all exchanges, as well as asset managers, mortgage servicers, and many others. One intriguing possibility, they say, is that Bloomberg, financial information giant, could even be designated as systemically important. So enormous quantities of highly confidential information pass through Bloomberg servers every day. So a breach there certainly would be catastrophic. As the Financial Times' Robin Wigglesworth recounts, one brief Bloomberg outage already has forced the UK government to actually postpone a debt issuance. That happened in 2015. Bottom line? Well, some banks are obviously systemically important, some more than others, but regulators think they need to be focused on more than just banks. Hey, one of the things I've been following for a couple of years, and some I've talked about and written about in our newsletter and blog, that intrigues me, and I think should intrigue all listeners, given how divisive our elections have come, is, you know, the shortcoming of the current system of how we elect our presidents, which we know stem from existing state laws that in just about all cases award all of a state's electoral votes to the presidential candidate who receives the most popular votes in the state. In fact, five of our 46 presidents came into office without winning the most popular votes nationwide. Well, the current state-by-state winner-take-all system regularly enables a few thousand votes in a small number of states to decide the presidency. And that fuels post-election controversies that we're seeing now and, to some extent, threatening the country's stability. Every vote is not equal throughout the U.S. under this our current system. There's the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which would apply the one-person, one-vote principle to presidential elections. It would guarantee the presidency to the candidate who gets the most votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Give candidates a reason to campaign in all 50 states because every voter in every state would be politically relevant in every future presidential election. And thus, it would probably increase voter turnout and I think, help ensure the peaceful transfer of power. The winner-take-all method of awarding electoral votes isn't in our Constitution and was never mentioned at the 1787 Constitutional Convention or in the Federalist Papers. The U.S. Constitution gives states exclusive control over the choice of method of awarding their electoral votes, thereby giving the states a built-in way to reform the system. Specifically, Article 2, Section 1 says, quote, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors, blah, blah, blah. So a state's winner-take-all law may be changed in the same manner as it was originally enacted, namely by passage of another state law. Under a national popular interstate vote law, the presidential candidate receiving the most popular votes in all 50 states and D.C. would get all electoral votes from all of the enacting states. Under the national popular vote law, no voter would have their vote canceled at the state level because their choice differed from majority sentiment in their state. Instead, every voter's vote would be added directly into the national count for the candidate of their choice. This would ensure that every voter in every state will be politically relevant in every presidential election, regardless of where they live, big state, small state, urban state, rural state. 15 states and the District of Columbia have already enacted this compact into law. And it would take effect, actually, nationwide if passed by states with an additional 75 electoral votes. You can help make the national popular vote a reality if you are interested in this concept. I would just Google national popular vote, see what you think. Let your legislator know how you feel one way or the other. Hey, last today, our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets last evening. I have an article that asks, how strong is the economy? And one of its banner anthems from the late 70s, Roll with the Changes. Thank you, by the way, to newsletter reader Justine Ziegler. For a correction in the date. I think I mentioned the early 2000s. But Roll with the Changes, the popular classic rock band REO Speedwagon, belts out the sing-along chorus, keep on rolling, keep on rolling. Well, New York Times columnist David Brooks seems to feel the same way about the economy. In a recent column, he observed, you can invent fables about how America is in economic decline, but the American economy doesn't care. It just keeps rolling on. Well, whether you agree with that or not, his colleague, Brooks's colleague, David Leonhardt, notes that when it comes to economic innovation and productive might, no country can still match the U.S., you know, with the likes of Apple, Google, Amazon, Tesla, OpenAI blazing new trails. Leonhardt writes, the standard measure of a nation's economic performance is per capita GDP. The value of the economy's total output divided by the size of its population. He points out that even as China's share of global GDP has skyrocketed over the past few decades, the U.S. still comprises virtually 25% of worldwide output. And that's about the same as in 1990. But as Nobel laureate and economist Paul Krugman reminds us, GDP doesn't necessarily measure everyday American standard of living. Because per capita GDP is an average, it can be distorted. One major example, income inequality, which is significant in our country, which means that the wealthy own a much larger share of output than in other countries. Per capita GDP here has risen 20%, 27% in the new millennium, from around 50,000 in 2000 to a little over 60 at the end of 2021. Interestingly, it was less than 25,000 in 1970. But median household income has risen only 7%, while income for the top 0.1% of earners has soared 41%. Anyway, Krugman says it's always important to bear in mind that GDP at best tells us how much a society can afford. It doesn't tell us whether the money is being well spent. And there's good reason to think it isn't. High GDP need not translate into a good quality of life. Individuals certainly can be rich, but miserable, and so can countries. But he adds, there are good reasons to believe that America is using its economic growth badly. Leonhardt says the unequal American economy continues to churn out an impressive array of goods and services while also failing to deliver deliver improved living standards. And polls suggest that most people aren't fooled. More importantly, some people now say we're in the early stages of adapting and readjusting to the end of ultra-low interest rates that were a basic assumption across the global economy before the pandemic. They add that the failure of SVB and the UK's debt currency market fiasco last year are examples of what could be a series of other headaches ahead. Instead, they warn, as the world adjusts to a new normal where money is no longer free, it's hard to envision a smooth road in the years ahead. I mean, we got boomers retiring, smaller generations filling in behind them, threatening labor supply, pressuring wages, and in the U.S., putting pressure on Social Security and government revenues in general. Some are even warning that we may be in the early stages of deglobalization as companies try to make their supply chains more sustainable. Plus, there's the deteriorating geopolitical scene where relationships between the U.S. and China, the U.S. and Russia, the U.S. Iran, the U.S. and North Korea, we should keep our eyes on all of them. But some observers think that large-scale investment is underway. Courtney Brown and Felix Salmon of Axios say, look at activity in semiconductors, plus battery manufacturing and solar cells, which some Wall Streeters are calling the mother of all CapEx cycles. But many policy experts, they say, view these developments as long-lasting forces, likely not to dissipate any time soon. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said late last year, it feels like we have a structural labor shortage out there. ECB President Christine Lagarde argued this week that global supply will be less elastic in this new normal, meaning routine disruptions will cause bigger price hikes than in the past. Well, if these views are correct, Brown and Irwin warn, Deal Irwin, something resembling today's rates of about 5% interest rates will become part of the new normal, with the risk of them going even higher. The problem is that banks, governments, and investments funds have built their business models around the old landscape, where interest rates are near or at, or even in some cases like Europe, below zero. The question then is, what other pockets of the global financial system will have a similar readjustment as the impact of higher interest rates multiplies through these global economies? Will banks face big losses on especially commercial real estate loans when low-rate debt matures and have to be rolled over into higher-rate debt, coupled with a loss in office rental income now that people are working from home? Will the U.S. actually run future budget deficits of 6% or more of GDP over the next decade, as forecast by some? That's a level that in the past occurred only during wars and recessions. And as we talked earlier, will higher interest rates and or a debt ceiling impasse cause a crisis in the treasury market? It's on the verge of that. For months, central bankers around the world, including those at the Fed, feared that rising wages would be a big problem for inflation. Felix Salmon says for now that doesn't appear to be the case. Salmon says that the pace of wage growth is consistent with inflation settling at the Fed's 2% target. It's also similar to the pace seen in the same period in 2019. Economist James Knightley at ING warns that higher labor bills are going to be fading as an excuse for companies to keep prices rising. I don't know about any of this, but I'm keeping my eye on this Friday's release of the government's employment cost index, because you know what? Jay Powell and company certainly will be. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. My thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a grand evening. See you next time. Bye-bye. And have a ball.